Well, thank you, Carrick, for the songs, and John had some excellent comments for us to consider. I'm sure glad you're here this morning. As was noted, we have some members that are traveling. Like I know the Elliots are down in Salem today, and Matt and Michelle Taylor are back east for a wedding, and so, and there are probably others out as well. I know Adam and Grace and David and Silas are all on their epic road trip, and so let's keep them in our prayers. There's something out there called emotional intelligence, and this is one book that kind of deals with that. Maybe you've heard the term before. I like the term awareness. And what really started people thinking about this is that they found this, that a number of people that were highly educated, had high IQs, sometimes didn't do very well in life. And they tried to figure out why. Well, why is that? Because for so long it was that IQ was like the determining factor in success. How smart are you? And in that book, the writer says, not education, not experience, not knowledge or intellectual horsepower, none of these serve as an adequate predictor as to why one person succeeds and another doesn't. He says there's something else going on in that society doesn't seem to account for. We see examples of this every day in our workplaces, our homes, our churches, our schools, our neighborhoods. We observe supposedly brilliant and well-educated people struggle, while others with fewer obvious skills and attributes flourish. And we ask ourselves, why? And he says the answer almost always is emotional intelligence, or I like the term awareness. Or probably the Bible has another term. Wisdom is in there as well. Example of this. I know me, Michelle, Bart, Cindy, we do a meetup once a week. Sometimes there's a guy that shows up, and he's obviously a lot smarter than I am. He knows Hebrew, all sorts of things like that. But he's not doing well in life. And I know one comment he made to me is, I have a problem with authority. And that can get you fired. And that can make it hard to get a job or keep a job when you have a problem with authority. When you think that you are smarter than your boss or your supervisor or etc. And that you have a problem just doing your job. He said, after all, as a society, we continue to focus most of our self-improvement energy in the pursuit of knowledge, experience, intelligent education. That's how many people seek to improve themselves. And there's nothing wrong with gaining knowledge, gaining experience, gaining education. But he said that'd be fine if we also at the same time had a full understanding of our emotions and the emotions of others. And an understanding of how our emotions influence our lives fundamentally every single day. Intelligence has been defined as your ability to learn. I would add the definition. I think your IQ is how fast you process information. That's your IQ. The size of the processor you have in your head. There are some people that, you know, one shot through chemistry, they've got it. Other people have to take it. Most people have to take it two or three times. And it's all about your processor. And some say that ability is pretty much fixed without through your lifetime. I've read other people that disagree with that. But that's your intelligence, your IQ. How fast you process information. How fast you grasp it. One definition of your personality is it's your stable style. It's just your stable style. And it's a result of your preferences. Emotional intelligence, I like the word awareness. It's like personal awareness, it's social awareness, it's relational awareness. It's how our emotions impact our thinking and decision making and being aware of that. Being aware of when we're in a bad mood. Being aware of where we get, when we need to get happy fast. Being aware of that the next thing we could say may really make the relationship spiral down. Being aware of what's about ready to come out of our mouth that we might want to not say. Emotional awareness. Being aware of how something could really hurt someone that we're about to say. James chapter 1 and verse 19. I think there's a good passage that we would say this is awareness. This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. I think that's awareness. Be a good listener. Don't interrupt people. Really listen to what they're saying. Don't say the first thing that just comes to your head. Don't just blurt something out. And being aware of how you could either quickly be putting water on a fire, relational fire, or you could be putting gasoline on the same relational fire. Watching people, reading people, understanding people. Being very aware of how our words and actions affect the people around us. Being very aware of how our words affect our children around us. Now, the Bible doesn't use the terms awareness, doesn't use the terms emotional intelligence, but I would argue that long before man really came upon those terms, the Bible had talked about them at length. For example, in everything, therefore, treat people the same way you want to be treated. That's awareness. I think our world would call that, that's emotional intelligence. This is the law and the prophets, Jesus said. There are so many passages in the Old Testament that basically the principle under that passage is treat people the way you want to be treated. That's why you don't commit adultery, that's why you don't steal, etc., because you would not want someone doing that to you. That's why you don't gossip, because you don't want someone gossiping about you. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. I think that's awareness. That's emotional intelligence. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Philippians 2, 3 through 4. I think that's awareness. You're not the only person on the planet. You're not the only person in the room. They may have had a bad day. You're not the only person at that restaurant. You're not the only person on the freeway. So don't take cuts. The person in that car ahead of you that's moving slow may be an old person. Or they may be someone lost. They may be, trying to find the right road. Awareness. You've been in the same situation before, or you are going to be in that situation. You're going to be the old person hunched over, driving down the road one of these days. So just awareness. That last verse reminded me of a verse in the Old Testament in the book of 2 Kings chapter 5. Is where Naaman the leper is healed. And none of that happens without a little servant girl that had been taken captive on one of the Syrian raids, without her being aware. It says, now the Syrians had gone out in bands and taken captive a little girl, 2 Kings 5:2, from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, then he would cure him of his leprosy. That starts the whole scenario. Naaman never shows up at the Jordan and is never healed if that little servant girl just says, I got so many problems of my own. I'm not at home anymore. I'm away from my mom and dad. And I'm working for these foreigners and these strangers. And I don't really care whether he has leprosy or not. You're taken from your family, you're a servant of someone else, of the people that took you. Do you care about the man of the house that has leprosy? There's awareness. I think, yeah, even though this is the enemy, I don't want any enemy to have leprosy. I wouldn't wish that upon my worst enemy. Is it obviously the leprosy that the master of the house is affecting his life? Not only that, but I don't think it would be a whole lot of fun being married to a leper. There are going to be some problems if you're married to someone who has leprosy. Like touching them. I mean, I think that's just one. You know, that's one problem, right? Kissing them, stuff like that. You know, that's a little bit of a problem there. Live with your wife in an understanding way. Awareness. Awareness when she's had a hard day. Awareness when the kids have been really taxing her. An awareness when she needs some help. Awareness. Awareness of all that she does, of all the hard work that she does. Awareness of how your life would be if you did not have her there. Awareness of, no, you cannot do better out there on the open market. Awareness, just some awareness. Awareness that if you have a godly woman, that's pretty special. That godly women are in short supply. Awareness. Awareness of those principles. Joseph, to me, is a great example of awareness. I think you'd have to argue that Joseph did not come from a normal family. Not like a family. I don't know if there's anyone here that came from a family like Joseph came from, where a man has two wives. He is betrayed. He is sold by his brothers or by his stepbrothers. He is hurt. He is mistreated. He is slandered by Potiphar's wife. He is unjustly treated. He is put in jail for something that he did not do. And it's not one of those good jails. It's not one of those jails with television and a snack bar and chips, you know, and stuff like that. It's not one of those jails where people can bring you stuff, jail. I mean, this is like where you're not an Egyptian and you're in an Egyptian jail, that you're a foreigner doing time in an Egyptian, and that you're viewed as a sex offender in this jail, right? That was the accusation. He's tried to take advantage of Potiphar's wife, even though that's not what he was. But that's the reputation going in. And yet, here's a man that is still very aware of how everyone feels around him. He picks up on when someone else is having a bad day. Genesis chapter 40, verse 6. When Joseph came to them in the morning, when the cupbearer and the baker had shown up, and observed them, behold, they were dejected. I don't know if I'd have been like Joseph. I mean, that's awareness. Because if I think I'm Joseph, I'm dejected. I mean, isn't that really, when you think about that, here is Joseph, 17, taken from his family, in Egypt, sold, never going to see maybe his mom and dad again, falsely accused by Potiphar's wife, just when it looks like life was having some brightness to it, and in the Egyptian jail, and he notices when somebody else is dejected. Do I? I mean, are there days that I walk around and there are dejected people around me and I don't even notice them because I am so absorbed in my problem, what I'm going through? Or, I know one of my problems is that I too often hit the day running. I need to get up. I need to stretch. I need to do my stretches. Too many times I just get up, bump up out of bed, and then it's, let's go. And it's like, whoa, let's slow down a little bit here. You might want to stretch a little bit, or, you know, you might want to be aware of kind of what's just going on. But do we just grab our coffee, whatever, get in that car, go to work? We got work to do. Sit down at the desk and go at it. And we're not noticing anybody else around us. You see, I don't think I have an excuse If Joseph can notice someone dejected, I don't think we have an excuse. I don't think we can say, well, one day to God, well, the reason, God, I didn't notice those other people because I had too many problems of my own. I do not have more problems than Joseph has. Now, God talks about our emotions. And often the Bible puts a big caution sign around our emotions. A big be careful sign. And the passages would be passages like, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. Don't put all this strength on how you feel and what you think and your opinion. Don't put a whole lot of stock in how you're feeling. Don't put a whole lot of stock in what you think. Check out what the Bible says. There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. For some reason, I was in the car yesterday, and Dave Ramsey was on. Someone called in and said, you know, we had this car, and it needed some, we owed $9,000 on it, but it needed some work, and we couldn't afford the work, and so we traded it in, but now we're in debt for $26,000, and I'm pregnant now, and the new car we have doesn't have room for the third car seat, and, you got another car? Yeah, my husband has a Tahoe, but it's on its last leg. And I like what he said. There's no reason to panic. You got the Tahoe. He said, you need to trade down, way down. You need to trade way down. But what I thought of that is that probably at the time, that seemed right. Of all those choices, that kind of seemed right. Isn't it interesting? That's one of those interesting things. Isn't it interesting if we have a car and someone says, this could be $500, we start thinking about getting rid of it, and all of a sudden, now we got like $20,000. it's like, we won't do $500, but we'll do $15,000 type of thing. Isn't it interesting how sometimes that's the way that we'll work? But it seemed right. It seemed right at the time. He who trusts in his own heart is a fool. Warning you about your emotions. But each one is tempted when he's carried away and enticed by his own lust. I think that's a warning about emotions. Because lust is a lot about how you feel. It's a very emotional sort of thing. For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. Anger is very emotional. A warning about your emotions. Now, obviously there's a lot of good reasons why God put a sign there on your emotions that said, be careful. Volatile substance. Flammable. Skull and crossbones on it. This can be really, really, really dangerous. I was at the beach a while back, and I usually never go in antique shops, but there was one, and it was this really creeped me out. It was all this old medical paraphernalia. And an old medical, it was the biggest collection of old medical collectibles on the West Coast. Like different instruments that look like, yikes, I'm glad I live in the 21st century. That looks painful if they were going to. And then also all these bottles of cures, castor oil, and they had this warning though before you went in, don't open any of that stuff up and don't ingest it because it can kill you. That was just a warning. Hey, here's something about 100 years old, some medication, maybe I'll open it up and, but it was all these warnings like, don't open the package and don't take any of those pills because it can kill you. And so warning, caution. But it was interesting, I discovered just something recently. One nurse said, our brains are hardwired to give emotions the upper hand. Here's how it works. Everything you see, smell, hear, taste, and touch travels through your body in the form of electric signals. These signals pass from cell to cell until they reach their ultimate destination, your brain. They enter your brain at the base near the spinal cord, but they must travel to your frontal lobe behind your forehead before reaching the place where rational, logical thinking takes place. The trouble is that they pass through where your emotions take place. And you know what? I think you'd have to say, well, that's true. You hear a song. My first response to a song is an emotional response, especially a song I haven't heard in a long time. I go, oh, that reminds me of, there was just a song that Cindy had played, I think. It goes, Silverton, Oregon, the Palace Theater, intermission, ladies in leopard suits laying in big vats of popcorn, go to the snack bar. I'm 10 years old at the Palace Theater again when I heard that song. There are smells. I'm out on the motorcycle. I'm out driving to the Tuesday market or whatever. I'm going the back way, out River Road or whatever, and I smell like they just cut a field, they baled hay, and I'm going, man, senior year of high school or sophomore year of high school or whatever. The first way I feel, it's an emotional response. I don't go, how tall is that straw? How big is that bale of hay? You know, it's not like this intellectual sort of response. I wonder how much they get a ton for that. It's my first response is always an emotional response. And I think that's one reason you have all those warnings is God knew that's the way you were designed, that your first response is probably going to be the emotional one. And that's why don't trust your heart, okay? Don't trust what you're feeling right now. Give it time. Don't talk right now. Be slow to speak. Because the emotional response, no, you don't want to do that right now. That God knows that's the way you're wired. This journey ensures you experience things emotionally before your reason can kick into gear. Now, I think your reason can kick into gear pretty quick. But that's why you have to be slow to speak. You know, give the smart little guy in your head time to do that. I was recently somewhere and someone came up and said, "Hi, Mark." I didn't have a clue who they were. And the little guy in my head is running through files. He's running through file cabinets. He's just running like, who is? And it's like, okay, here's a face. Put 10 or 20 years on them, minus 10 or 20 years, who are they? You know, I mean, the little guy's trying to do that in a matter of seconds to figure out who that guy is. Give the little guy in your head, give the analytic guy in your head, give the rational guy in your head time. Give him a little bit of time, so be slow to speak and quick to hear. The good news. The good news, though, is that the Bible makes it very clear, you don't have to be a slave of your emotions. And that you can actually develop greater emotional awareness, or what some people might call wisdom. That's, if people say that IQ is fixed in this area, they say, this is not fixed. This is something that you can greatly improve. Even non-Christians say, this is something that you can greatly improve in your life, of just being very aware of your emotions and the emotions of others, and how your words affect people. As I said, what really got some people started on this is that here is one of those statistics that researchers had a hard time figuring out, like, what's going on here. People with the highest levels of intelligence outperform those with average IQs 20% of the time, while people with average IQs outperform those with high IQs 70% of the time. And that was a stat that researchers just go, like, what's going on there? Why is it that it looks like that the people with the average IQs are doing a lot better 70% of the time? Because what was always assumed was that it was intelligence, that success and intelligence, those are the two things that went hand in hand. And they said, well, there's another factor there that we're missing. And this was the factor. Here's one of those things of, and it kind of depends on how the economy is doing. There have been times in my life that I've thought, you know, that there are different fields that if you're gifted enough at writing code or something like that, You can have the worst personality in the world and still do great. And sometimes if people are desperate for, if employers are desperate, there's kind of this thing that sometimes that's true. You can be antisocial, you can not bathe or whatever, and people are going to hire you. But the real test is what happens when the economy takes a dip, because usually when the economy takes a little dip, if you're in that category, you're the first one that goes. And that is, actually there are people waiting for you to go and waiting to give a reason to go. So I know we live in a culture sometimes now that thinks like, it doesn't matter. If I'm gifted enough and smart enough, I can treat everyone else like dirt just because I'm in demand. And I would caution anyone to ever believe that. I don't think that's true. I really don't think that's true. This is important. How you treat people is important. Not just because the Bible says that. Reality says that too. You know, an example of this is in the account that we're looking at in 2 Kings chapter 5. Name again. Here's to me an example of this. When Elisha said to Naaman, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you will be clean. Naaman was furious and went away and said, behold, I thought he will surely come out to me, stand and call in the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the place, and cure the leper. Then he goes into, we got a couple of rivers up there where I'm from that are a lot better than the rivers down here, a lot better than the Jordan. And he turned away and went away in a rage. Then his servants came there and spoke to him and said, my father, had the prophet told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more than what he says to you, wash and be clean. I think that's a great example that probably Naaman was more gifted than his servants in certain areas. Maybe military skill, planning, operations, strategy, how to conduct a battle. Those sort of things. Naaman probably was smarter than his servants. But here's a great example where the servants have more awareness than Naaman has. Naaman is about to walk away from a chance to be cured as a leper. Like John's illustration, Naaman is like the Mexican street dog that is given a chance to come to America and live in a house with crown molding. And meal, you know, and a fenced yard and dog toys and treats from Petco or what is the, there's a mail order one, I forget what the name of it, but yeah, stuff that comes in a box, dog stuff that comes in a box right to your door. And no, I don't think so. I think I'll stay here in Mexico and scrounge through the garbage heaps. I mean, that's the equivalent of what Naaman is about ready to do. And I think a servant see that and go like you would do. You probably have a situation with coworkers or relatives where someone's about ready to do something. You go, what's going on here? They're about ready to pass up on a great deal. And I think that's where they show more wisdom and awareness in the area. Knowing that, but I think it's a great example where Naaman's emotions are getting the better of him. It's a great example of where Naaman is his worst enemy at this point. The problem is not Elisha. The problem is not the Israelites. No one is keeping him from being healed. He is. He's in the way. And I think that's a great example. When you look at that text again, not only when you look at it from the standpoint of Naaman is not healed until he obeys God. He has to dip in the Jordan that many times until he's healed. So you have to obey God. But I think, look at that text and say, is that me? Am I Naaman at times when I'm my worst enemy? And often I'm my worst enemy is when I'm in a rage. And I'm in the way between me and something good. There's a cure out there. It's not a difficult cure. It's a cure that I could very easily grasp and gain. But I'm in the way. I'm in the way because of my anger. Because it's not exactly the way I thought it would go down. One writer said, speaking to a secular audience, the writer noted, we enter the workforce knowing how to read, write, report on bodies of knowledge, but too often we lack the skills to manage our emotions in the heat of the challenging problems that we face. Good decisions require far more than factual knowledge. They require things like self-control, patience, and selfishness. How to get along with people. How to listen. How to compromise. All right. Here's one of the big advantages of either being a Christian or being raised by a mom and dad who are Christians. They've been working on your emotional intelligence from day one. How many kids here have been told Proverbs 15 and verse 1, a soft answer, but grievous words stir up strife? You know, a soft answer diffuses the situation. Have you ever had an argument? Anyone here had an argument with your sister or your brother? And you're kind of starting to escalate things, and mom or dad can say, soft answer. A soft answer brings it down. Grievous words or harsh words, it's only going to make the problem worse. See, that's one of the advantages of being raised in a Christian home, is that since day one, mom and dad have been working on your awareness. Hey, you don't hit your sister. You don't hit your brother. You want to be hit? Hey, you share your toys. If you don't share your toys, no one will play with you. You don't want to be someone that no one's going to play with. Hey, there's someone over there. Someone's coming over. Why don't you kind of show them your toys when you're coming over? You know, they're new. They're probably going to be nervous. They never met you. You know, they're our guests. Let's make them feel welcome. That's awareness. You know, you're talking about that person you have at school that people really kind of tend to pick on. Do you think it'd be fun would you like it if someone picked on you? See, all growing up, mom and dad have been working on your awareness. And not only that, but on awareness, things like your words. And things like please and thank you. Now, you might not think that please and thank you mean a whole lot. But when you're interviewing for a job, they can mean a whole lot. When you're meeting your future wife's parents, that can go a long ways. Me and Cindy were just in someone's apartment yesterday looking at some art that he did. He's not a Christian, but me and Cindy could both tell something about him. Someone had sought to teach him values. You can tell. You can tell even when someone who's not a Christian, wasn't raised in a Christian home, when either a mom or dad, someone tried to teach that young man values. Not a Christian, but there was thank you. There was please. You could just tell. Someone had put a lot of effort into trying to teach him awareness and emotional intelligence and manners. Someone had really worked on him when it came to manners. You can just tell that. I think probably most people in an interview can tell 5 minutes into the interview somewhat how you were raised. That comes across pretty strong. Someone tried to teach you values. You know, Solomon noted that there's going to be endless supply of books. Now that's good news for Amazon. There's going to be an endless supply of books to read in life. But there's something, and he doesn't say, good, great. I think he says, don't get lost in just reading a lot of stuff. Great to read, but here's the thing you need to have nailed down before you tackle all the books. The conclusion when all has been heard is fear God and keep his commandments. Because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it's good or evil. How you treated people, what you said to people, that sort of thing. Respecting your Creator and listening to Him. That's something far more important than just kind of reading all the best sellers. Social awareness. We are surrounded by confused and hurting people. we are surrounded by lost people. We are surrounded by people that don't know where to turn. Are we aware of that? Are we aware of that in our neighborhood? Are we aware of that at work? We are surrounded by people that are completely unprepared for death and for Jesus when he shows up. I remind me of something said about Jesus in Matthew chapter 9:36. Seeing the people, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. Awareness. Awareness. Years ago, I knew a young lady. She was pretty. Pretty young lady. Something had happened in her past and that had surfaced. And she came to services one day with a shaved head. And her grandma said, "Why like it? I should have slapped grandma. I should have told her, shut up." Or took her aside and told her that. You've got a granddaughter that doesn't know who she is now and hurting. And your daughter doesn't know what to do. And you're saying, "I like it. Keep your mouth shut." Probably should have said that on the side to the grandma. To the daughter, I should have just took her hand and cried. That's probably just what I should have done. Understanding that what had happened in her life and what she was going through, I just should have took your hand and cried. Awareness. Awareness is important. And I think a lot of times we wish that at an early age in life we had better awareness. To help people that were hurting and people that were being flippant and superficial and shallow, to take them aside and say, "You're not helping right now. You need to see what's going on here." Our words can instantly change a situation for better or worse. There are words that, like the thrusting of a sword, Proverbs chapter 12:18. And there are words that heal. Or as Ephesians 4:29 say, a word for the moment. A word for the moment. It may give grace. You know, our verbal outbursts and acts of anger are being observed, especially by our children and by our wives, by our husbands, and by society. If we allow our emotions to rule us, our IQ and education will not prevent us from becoming a fool. They won't. I think recently when we saw everything in Hollywood blow up, with producers and actors and things like that, different accusations of sexual impropriety, those are talented people, those are highly educated people, those are smart people. But that won't prevent you from becoming a fool if you don't have wisdom and character and if you don't have God in your life. I think of Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 32, and I think that's the importance of awareness and God, character, wisdom. Don't forget that. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. The most powerful person that you're going to encounter is someone who's in control of themselves, who can control their anger, who can control their lust, their selfishness. That's more powerful than a person that rules an empire or a nation. That's important. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28. There it says, like a city that is broken into without walls is a man who has no control over his spirit. How we present the gospel is also important to others. Awareness. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15.
that we sanctify Christ as Lord in our hearts, that He's truly the Lord of our life, and that we are always ready to make a defense. We know what we believe, and we're ready to defend it to anyone to ask us for why we believe what we believe, for why we have the hope we have. Yet with gentleness and reverence or respect. Awareness. I think a lot of us sometimes wish that we had more awareness about the people that were looking for the truth, but we didn't pick up on it. We were just really busy at the moment. That we didn't extend the conversation. Maybe an awareness of when should you extend the conversation one more step. The time that, you know, I need to ask one more question here. Or I need to say, you know, would you like to get together for coffee sometime and talk about this? A lot of times we want to kind of break off conversations because we've got things to do. We've got places to go. And we need to have the awareness that when we need to stay in that conversation longer and pursue that, the awareness that right now we have someone who looks like they're interested, they have questions. We need to be willing to carve out time for people like that. The Bible says, "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." On the day of Pentecost, Peter said, "Repent and be baptized, every one of you, in the name of Jesus Christ, for the forgiveness of your sins." And then he said, "Save yourselves from this crooked generation." And the people that were baptized, the 3,000 people that were baptized that received his word, were added that day by Jesus himself. And the passage John started with in Colossians chapter 1 is where they were added. Is that they were transferred from the domain of darkness to the kingdom of his beloved Son. This morning, if you're not in the kingdom of the beloved Son, get in there. The domain of darkness is not a good place to be or stay. There's no future there. Whatever way we could help you, encourage you, answer your questions, we're here. Let's be singing the invitation song.